Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome to the third hour of Up North News. For this Thursday, September 8th, I'm joined now by Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil, who joins us from the City of Angels in Los Angeles, California. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for having me back, Pat.
Oh, my pleasure. Kia works on so many different stories for all eight of the outlets in the Courier Newsroom family, including Up North News. And he's actually done a lot of his most recent work focusing on the Wisconsin Attorney General's race. So we'll talk about that in a little while. But as we talk about some other national headlines and some of the other state races that are going on, I have to start with the fact that Barack and Michelle Obama were back at the White House yesterday to have their official portraits unveiled. They made some comments. The comments were basically democracy good, not democracy bad. And some national media types took to chiding them and calling the comments political. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? I don't know. Did it strike you the same way to see the reaction to what seemed to be pretty benign Yay America comments?
Yeah, I wish I could say I was surprised after, you know, I don't know why anyone would think that, you know, a president talking about democracy is somehow problematic, or, you know, a president is inherently political. He led the country. So it's a baffling critique to me that, you know, the Obamas saying, you know, democracy is good, the peaceful transition of power is good, is somehow controversial. It shouldn't be. And any media who are trying to both sides that or create a story out of that are hacks.
Yeah. I mean, to put it nicely. And really, I think it's almost maybe to avoid talking about the more obvious story. And I'm not saying they ignored it, but the fact that this was supposed to happen during the Trump administration, but Donald Trump wouldn't allow it to happen. And that's why it didn't take place until now. That's not how these things normally work.
No, it's not. And, you know, that just shows the, you know, the Trump administration. Trump obviously had such a beef with Obama, who was always more popular than him, always, you know, and just his entire administration sought to undo the 8 years of Barack Obama. And, you know, it's petty and it's all obviously had real consequences for people on one hand. And then there's things like this, which are just so petty and, you know, delayed the unveiling, which, you know, not a big deal, doesn't change, isn't earth shattering, but, you know, it's pretty emblematic of the difference of the last, you know, two administrations, one that picked weird personal petty fights and one that's sort of trying to get the country back on track.
Well, and, you know, it's for me to say, not you. So I'll go ahead and say it, but I do wonder if by the time we get to the official unveiling of the Trump portrait someday, if he will be in prison orange, because I don't know if that's really what you make an official portrait out of, but yeah, time will tell. Kia Vakil joins us to talk about some of the things that are going on nationally, but yeah, let's go ahead and talk a bit about what you're doing closer to home here for us, because again, all of our staffs are, you know, relatively small compared to some of the big newsrooms out there. And we have our hands full just playing the game of what did Ron Johnson say this time, covering that Senate race against Mandela Barnes. Of course, the governor's race, Tim Michaels versus Governor Tony Evers. But there are some extremely important down ballot races in Wisconsin and other states, from Secretary of State to State Treasurer to Legislature. And some of your most recent work has been telling people about the Attorney General's race here in Wisconsin.
Yeah. So like you said, you guys have several, nearly half a dozen statewide races, all of which are super important. But there's not as much coverage of, you know, the ones that aren't the governor's race or the Senate race. So I've been covering the Attorney General race between, you know, the incumbent Josh Call and his opponent Eric Toney, the Republican, And, you know, we're really just starting to ramp up that coverage. We'll also be covering some of those other races you mentioned. But, you know, it's an important race. There's not most voters, you know, don't understandably, they have busy lives. They're working one, two, sometimes three jobs just to get by. They're not thinking about who they probably couldn't name their attorney general in a lot of places. There was a time in my life where I couldn't name my attorney general. So, but it's an important position, you know, after 2020 election, Josh Call was one of the foremost voices in Wisconsin defending the election results, speaking out against the efforts to overturn the election, you know, talking forcefully about that really absurd lawsuit from Texas trying to stop Wisconsin certification. So Call, and most recently, you know, is vowed to protect, you know, election officials from the threats and harassment that they've been facing. So that's him. And then on his opponent, Eric Toney, was considered the more moderate in his primary, which is saying something, because he's charged voters with just because they, a Trump voter actually, and four others who had their addresses, voting addresses registered at a UPS store and didn't realize that's against the law. He's trying to charge them and prosecute them and put them in prison.
Trying to treat them as felons for making the mistake of the address that they put on their registration form. We'll talk a bit more on the other side of this break about the attorney general race. Then we'll get into some of the other races that are happening around the country. We'll probably have to start with Dr. Oz because it's just the weirdest. We think our Senate race is unusual. Pennsylvania, man. I don't know, Kia. I don't know. That's your place, not mine. We'll talk more after the break. You're up north. Kiva Keel joins us, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, as we talk about races in Wisconsin, elsewhere around the country, and then some of the issues that surround it. The New York Times has an article this morning that introduces readers to some of the more colorful characters who are going to make up the Republican caucus. Whether they are in the majority or not, they're still going to be even more Marjorie Taylor Greens in Congress. Kia, it makes for good copy. It makes for bad democracy. But you're not going to run out of things to write about.
No. And that's a trend we've seen happening for since 2018. I mean, the whole Trump era basically is the lesson that some, you know, Republicans have learned is to get elected means to just go as extreme as possible, say as many crazy things as possible, and effectively post your way to the candidacy and just really capture the right wing base and essentially become a media figure more than a lawmaker. You know, I don't know that Marjorie Taylor Greene has passed a single, I don't think she has passed a single law.
No, has no interest in it. No.
No, most of them have no interest in it. Madison Cawthorn, who lost his primary, he's gonna go on, I'm sure, to be like a Fox News correspondent like figure. And Matt Gaetz has no interest in it. You know, all of these people and some of the new ones who are coming in, I'm sure, you know, are going to just be people who stir the pot and say crazy things and never do anything to actually improve people's lives.
No. And, you know, if it just stayed at that, if politics were becoming, you know, one big reality show, thanks to, you know, the Sean Duffy's and others who actually were on reality shows, that would be one thing. But they end up getting a lot of people riled up, and those people can go to extremes. And that takes me to this item I teased earlier that I wanted to bring up, and that is the far-right extremist group Oath Keepers recently had their membership list leaked. And the reports out yesterday included that there were hundreds of Wisconsin residents, including elected officials and law enforcement officers, on the list. Now, the Oath Keepers played a key role in the insurrection on January 6th. This is not a Tea Party, pun intended. These are people that have made threats of violence, who have carried them out. And while there are no big Wisconsin names on the list, there are these six elected officials. And I want to tell folks about them and what one of them had to say. So there was Madison alderperson Gary Halverson. There was Stan Wecken, who is the president of the village board in North Hudson over on the Minnesota border. There's Randy McHugh, a trustee in the village of Sullivan in Jefferson County. Darla LeClaire is the city council president in Two Rivers up in Manitowoc County. Rodney Stanek in the village of Holman near La Crosse. And Rick Richard is a supervisor on the Rock County Board in the Janesville area. Now, a couple of those folks quickly put distance between themselves, said they, you know, I've terminated my membership, et cetera, et cetera. Not Randy McHugh, the village board member in Sullivan, town of Sullivan in Jefferson County. He says the Oath Keepers aren't an extremist group, and he told a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter the following. Quote, I don't label groups except the media, and I label you as slime, McHugh said. My official statement to you is, this is a joke. The Milwaukee Sentinel is a joke. So again, we see the attack on media, that apparently media is the issue. It's not the violent extremist group. And, you know, this Randy McHugh, he's not alone in people who are being agitated by these otherwise colorful characters.
Yeah. It's a problem, and it's very strange. I mean, that's a huge part of, you know, being a conservative, so to speak, now, is to just bash the media and accuse them of making every story up or exaggerating everything. And look, no one's perfect, but, you know, they are documented members of the Oath Keepers, and that is a documented group of extremism and hate. And they've done a lot of really scary things. And, you know, to accuse the media of somehow inventing that or misrepresenting that is laughable.
Yeah, to put it mildly. And so, again, we wish they were just the colorful characters, because that's easier to cover. It's no less, you know, useless to democracy or to a functioning government. But that takes us to Dr. Oz, the TV personality who's running for Senate in Pennsylvania against Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, the Democrat, seeking that open U.S. Senate seat. Kia, my favorite moment of the past week was when Dr. Oz said he grew up south of Philadelphia, and the Fetterman campaign quickly put out just a close-up of a map, and it follows you down the streets of Philadelphia till you get south of Philadelphia, which is the river, which is New Jersey. New Jersey is what is south of Philadelphia. This guy cannot escape New Jersey no matter how hard he tries.
No, and it's, you know, it's... And I wrote a tweet to this effect last week, but I was born in Philly. I grew up in the suburbs of Philly in Pennsylvania, and then moved to South Jersey for middle school. And I cannot imagine a worse state to try to move to and carpet bag and pretend like that's not an issue. People in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania care about where you're from. Not that they dislike you if you're from somewhere else, but it's a huge source of pride to be from Pennsylvania. And there's an enormous, and same with Jersey, there's an enormous rivalry in terms of friendly, but important. And, you know, Oz, this is I don't know how he thought this wouldn't be a gigantic issue. And the Fetterman campaign has done a really good job of pointing it out repeatedly, like with that content you're pointing out. And I do think it matters. You know, it matters if the guy who's worth up to $500 million is just jumping to your state to run for office and he doesn't know anything about your state. That's a problem. How can he represent you and what you need if he doesn't know you?
Sorry about that. Close up this page here. Don't you love pre-roll on website pages? What I was looking was to take it to another race in Pennsylvania, the Senate race between Democrat Josh Shapiro and Republican insurrectionist Doug Mastriano. And the article I was looking at there before the commercial popped up was that Mastriano is continuing to hold events, not just where media aren't allowed, but where media are kicked out before, you know, and not being allowed to ask any questions. Now, as we examined in our last hour, you know, Ron Johnson has consistently tried to paint himself as being a victim of the media, and that's why he lied in July about his, you know, tepid support for same-sex marriage, which is now full-on opposition. But, you know, to give him some kind of credit, at least he does talk to media, even if he's misleading them. Doug Mastriano is really indicative of what we're finding in a lot of right-wing candidates about such a hostility to the media that they're not answering any questions that aren't coming from their own right-wing ecosystem, their own bubble.
Yeah. And, you know, it's an open question of, you know, that obviously comes from a hostility towards media and a belief that, you know, anything to the, anything that's not Fox News or Breitbart or, you know, one of these 100 right-wing podcasts or radio shows is somehow fake or, you know, not going to give them a fair shake. When in reality, you know, most of these mainstream media outlets would bend over backwards to accommodate and cover, you know, candidates. And it's an open question. You know, Mastriano wants to be governor of Pennsylvania. It's one of the biggest states in the country with one of the biggest media markets. And most people are not consuming, you know, online podcasts, you know, on Rumble. So I am very curious to see if that strategy works. I'm extremely skeptical because most people still get their news, you know, on local news, on their local ABC or NBC station or on local radio. Obviously, a lot of people get it more on Facebook and Instagram more and more, but to completely black out most major media and not, aside from being like really bad as a candidate and, you know, bad for democracy and bad for actually helping voters understand what you care about, I think it's a bold choice because, you know, he's betting that the small right wing, not small, the right wing base is going to be enough to put him over the top in Pennsylvania. And it will be interesting to see if that actually proves true.
And so I haven't seen any polling recently. I don't know that you have. We've spent so much time dunking on Dr. Oz for one mistake after another. But I would imagine this is still a competitive race, it being Pennsylvania, but as swing as the state is.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, we no history of bombing or doing anything really, frankly, to help people after became a TV doctor and started shilling products would never stand a chance. But in this political environment, like, he's going to get somewhere between 40, at minimum 44, 45% is my guess, because it's a swing state. You know, Republicans are going to vote for the candidate with the R next to their name. Democrats are going to vote for the candidate with the D next to their name in most cases. So it's going to come down to, you know, those really sort of swingy 10% of voters who decide elections in Pennsylvania. And included in that are the people who may not have voted before or who only vote sometimes. And, you know, I think the polls have pretty much all shown Fetterman ahead, but varying degrees, anywhere from a couple points to like 15, 16 points. And there's no chance he's going to win by 15 or 16, but Oz has a chance, which is insane, which is a crazy thing to say out loud, but you'd want to be Fetterman right now.
Oh, without a doubt. And there was, you know, last week the talk was whether there would be a debate, and the Oz campaign put out such an insulting statement attacking Fetterman's past health episodes as to be, you know, there was nothing serious about it. So I think we're still waiting to see if those two will ever get on the same stage. But it reminds me that, you know, Oz and the Republicans, they're not looking to get on the news, on the evening news, through talking to a reporter. They already know they're on the evening news during the commercial breaks, where they have full control over the situation. And I know it would never happen, having worked in TV news, but the easy answer would be not to put political ads on a newscast, you know, to own your content block. That's probably too much to ask, but I mean, it's all about the bubbles, isn't it? Either you're in your media bubble or in your commercial bubble where you can't be, you know, asked any questions.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. In an ideal world, there'd be no political ads during news broadcasts. It's unfortunately most news companies have a profit motive, so they're going to put up the ads. But, you know, that's problematic in a whole host of ways. But speaking to the Oz campaign, yeah, they're trying anything right now, because what they tried from May through mid-August absolutely did not work. And, you know, it was every single day was a barrage of bad stories and bad headlines and good press about Fetterman. And, you know, in the last couple of weeks, they've really just honed in on this debate situation and, you know, trying to make Fetterman seem extreme because he believes that some people who have previously served time in prison deserve a second chance. And that's, if you think that's disqualifying, that a candidate, you know, believes in a second chance for certain former incarcerated individuals, then maybe Oz is your candidate. But, you know, they're just trying anything right now.
Oh, and they're definitely going to try the crime approach. That we're certainly seeing that here. We'll see it in the attorney general race in Wisconsin. You know, anything you can do to scare voters at this point. Kiev Akil is with us. We'll take a break here and talk more about what's happening in these last 60 days till the midterms. After this, you're up north.
From Lake Wasota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
It's Thursday morning. This is Up North News. Pat Kreitlow, along with Kiev Akil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Kiev's been working on stories about the Biden administration's plans to forgive student loan debt to a certain amount. It's made a lot of people happy. It's made a lot of politicians unhappy. I was just noting here, I was looking for recent headlines about it, and Arizona's Republican Attorney General says he and others are looking to bring a legal challenge to the Biden plan to cancel student debt. I mean, this is a group of people who are already the only political class on earth in developed nations dedicated to making it harder for people to vote. So why wouldn't they be the people actually fighting to not forgive education debt so that, you know, people can you know, spur the economy with the savings. But anyway, that recent development, besides the point, Kia, tell us about the stories you've worked on this student loan debt forgiveness plan.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Biden announced it a couple weeks ago, and it's a huge deal. You know, it's up to $20,000 for in debt cancellation for people who had Pell Grants, which, you know, is a good way to target it towards people who came from middle class and working class and lower income families, and because that's who the Pell Grant is designed for. And that's, you know, can be life changing. A lot of people took out these loans when they were 17, 18 years old, myself included. So I know the thought process. I know what it's like when you're that age. You don't understand really what you're signing up for. No high schools are preparing you for what that reality is. And so I've racked up tens of thousands of dollars of debt. I know people who have hundreds of thousands of dollars. And like for them, this $20,000 obviously is not going to cancel all their debt. But for a lot of people, it will. It's some 20 million people. And that means they might be able to one day buy a home, might be able to, you know, move into a better neighborhood, start a business, help their sick family member. You know, debt is crushing in this country, and there is no way to discharge student loan debt unless you, you know, work in the public sector for a certain amount of time. And, you know, people only took these loans because their entire life they were told you got to go to college to get a good job. And the federal government stopped increasing, you know, aid for college as the cost increased. You know, the cost of college dramatically rose from 1970 to now, and federal aid pretty much stayed the same. And so the only way to make that up is through loans. And so people took those loans and not really realizing, because again, they're 17. Like, what do you expect from a 17, 18 year old? I was a 17, 18 year old. And so, you know, it's been an anchor around a lot of people's necks as they've become adults and tried to start families. I know people who don't know if they want kids because they don't think they can afford them because of student loan debt. And so to try to cancel $20,000 is life-changing. And for Republicans to oppose it for political points or out of some weird ideology that no one should ever benefit from something that previous people didn't benefit from is just asinine.
And, you know, it was said very clearly by White House spokesman Abdullah Hassan, who accused the Republicans of double standards in punishing the middle class, saying, quote, "Let's be clear about what they're trying to do here. The same folks who voted for a $2 trillion tax giveaway for the rich and had hundreds of thousands of dollars of their own small business loan debt forgiven are trying to keep millions of working middle class Americans in debt." That states it pretty clearly. And it seems like Republican campaigns were testing the waters to see if this would be some kind of an issue, you know, to build up resentment against, you know, college educated elites or whatnot. I'm not hearing that quite as much. So I don't know if either they already saw that that wouldn't get traction or if I'm just missing it. But, you know, do you have any impression as to whether you think that that is going to be a message with campaigns, or is this something that, again, has some grousing, but is going to be a done deal?
I think politically they're trying to make that a political problem for Democrats. They're trying to make this seem like, you know, Democrats are somehow giving away money to the rich, when comically that's exactly what Republicans do every time they pass a major law, and they do nothing else. Basically, they talk about taking away Social Security or making it, you know, renewable every year. They talk about repealing the Affordable Care Act. They talk about, you know, privatizing education, you know, all these things that only benefit rich people. And then when Democrats forgive student loans, which by and large, literally the cancellation is designed to benefit working class, middle class, and yes, maybe a handful of people who make, you know, above the median income. Some people, for sure, some people are going to benefit who, you know, make $100,000 a year. But again, the vast majority of beneficiaries make under $75,000 a year. And with the costs of everything going up in the last few years, that's not as much as it used to be. So they are going to try to make it a talking point. I don't think it's been effective. I don't think it will be effective. Every poll has showed a majority of Americans pretty much support the exact plan Biden has pushed. But they're really committed, and Republicans don't always, they almost never are doing things that are popular. And so because they have this right-wing media echo chamber, they don't really have to. And because of the way the Senate is proportioned and the Electoral College, they can get away with catering to their base in a way Democrats can't. And so I think they're going to try to overturn this. You hear Ted Cruz talking about, let's try to find someone who has legal standing to bring a case to get this overturned. And, you know, they're open about it. They want to strike this down. And I, you know, it's unclear if that will succeed, but with the Supreme Court the way it is, it's possible. And then, you know, you've thrown 20 million people's lives into complete chaos if you do that. People are planning their lives as if these debts are forgiven. And if Republicans not only try to overturn this, but succeed, you know, I'm genuinely worried about what that's going to bring.
So the opposition that I led with came from the Attorney General in Arizona. So we'll stay there with the Senate race between incumbent Democrat Mark Kelly and Republican challenger Blake Masters. When last we left the Arizona Senate race, Blake Masters was scrubbing some of the more extreme abortion language off his website. Is there any chance that he kind of pulled a flip-flop the way Tim Michaels did with the Trump endorsement on his website, or is he still trying that tactic of making people think he's more moderate than he is?
Oh, it's both. I mean, Blake Masters he called abortion a genocide in one of his first campaign ads. He celebrated the demise of Roe v. Wade. He, you know, mocked abortion rights protesters who just believe that women should have the ability to make their own reproductive choices. He was as vehemently anti-abortion, anti-reproductive freedom as you could find until like 3 weeks ago. And now, after he won his primary and after, you know, special elections showed Republicans getting absolutely hammered because of those extreme views, now suddenly he's a reasonable, oh, we should only ban late-term abortions, which are 1% of abortions, let's be clear. So he went from even supporting, you know, a federal personhood law, which would completely ban abortion with no exceptions, to being like, let's ban 1%. That's not someone who has a fixed, that's not someone who, that flip-flop is political. That's not, he's not suddenly changed his opinion. He's just full of it and knows that he has to pivot, because otherwise he's going to get absolutely creamed in November.
Now, again, you take nothing for granted, and that's what takes us over to the governor's race for Michigan, where I'm reading that a new Detroit News WDIV-TV poll shows that Democratic incumbent Governor Gretchen Whitmer has expanded her lead over Republican challenger Tudor Dixon, 48-35. But again, we're talking 60 days yet to go in a state that, you know, also gave us people who plotted to kidnap Governor Whitmer, you know, which had a bit of a Wisconsin tie to it. So what is the latest that you're hearing on the race there? Obviously, it's It's not nearly as close as in Wisconsin, but probably as colorful.
Yeah, I mean, that's a race that, you know, Whitmer is one of the stronger incumbent Democrats in a swing state. You know, she has a record. She has a message. She's running pretty strongly on reproductive freedom. And she has an opponent who's been repeatedly, you know, said before the primary that she was opposed to abortion with no exceptions for rape, incest, or the life of the mother. And then sometimes she said, oh, maybe for the life of the mother. And then other times she said, no, not for the life of the mother, not even for a 14-year-old who was raped. That's Tudor Dixon. And she was considered the most mainstream candidate in the Republican primary. And so pretty much every poll has showed her down by double digits or close to it. And, you know, I think that race is really going to come down to reproductive rights. And you have two very, there's a stark contrast there. And, you know, Dixon is a political newcomer. She's, you know, done conservative media. She was an actress in, you know, low budget movies at a time, which, you know, is relevant, frankly. But what matters is her view on reproductive freedom. And she clearly does not believe women in Michigan should have the right to make family planning decisions. And Whitmer does. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. And, you know, there's obviously different issues that factor in. Education's a big deal. They have huge contrasts on that. Whitmer wants to invest in public education. Tudor Dixon has a plan that would dramatically weaken public schools and double down on vouchers. She's supported by Betsy DeVos, who is, you know, as almost as big a villain as exists in American politics. So, you know, that race is, I don't think it's going to be particularly close. I think Michigan Republicans have nominated a slate of like really unelectable candidates in a year that they could have won had they nominated folks who, you know, have some understanding of how to win swing voters.
Yes. Well, and that's very telling that we're talking about some of the states where somebody who embraces right-wing views could win. Now that we've already established, that's going to happen a lot in the House of Representatives because of gerrymandered districts. And again, you've got smaller districts. It's easier to make them more amenable to somebody from the extreme, but you can't gerrymander a state. And whether you're talking about Michigan or the Minnesota governor's race, which is all but over, because again, the Republican candidates for governor and lieutenant governor, I mean, fringe is putting it mildly. And so, like you said, they're still going to get the 40% of the vote. But I guess I'm kind of looking ahead here to think, what are we going to be talking about the week after the election? Well, we'll probably talk about the one or two instances where, oh, my gosh, we have more Marjorie Taylor Greens. But I think there might be a real story here of all the races that Republicans could have won if they had just, you know, if they were just said to Donald Trump, I can quit you. You're fired. And we want to get back into the political mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, I think 6 months ago, had you asked anyone, they'd say the election's going to hinge on inflation. And now, increasingly, it's going to be reproductive rights. It's the extreme candidates Republicans have nominated. And frankly, it's democracy. You know, it's those are, I think people still care about rising costs. Obviously, that's a huge issue. But, you know, over the last couple of months, you've seen millions of women lose the right to control their own decisions about whether they have children. That's a life-changing decision that Republicans took away. And so that's a huge deal. And frankly, that they've nominated a whole bunch of super far right, like just, you know, totally out of the mainstream candidates is also a huge deal. You know, you're seeing that Mitch McConnell has pretty much said that he thinks they might lose the Senate because of candidate quality, which is code for we nominated a bunch of wackadoodles. And so, you know, I think after November, you know, granted, things could change. 60 days is a long time, but the trajectory right now is that Democrats will probably could hold the Senate and maybe even the House and maintain a lot of these governor's mansions because of their Republican attacks on reproductive freedom and the nomination of truly extreme candidates. And, you know, I think the other factor is, you know, you mentioned they doubled down on Trumpism. And yeah, I think that Trumpism has a ceiling. You know, its ceiling is 47, 48%. He lost by 7 million votes. The reason he won the first time was the way the Electoral College works and James Comey, frankly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, but there is about 40% of Republicans want whatever Trump is selling. So in the calculation of folks like Kevin McCarthy and, you know, Tudor Dixon and all these other people, Dr. Oz, you know, they think that's the only way to win. And in a lot of states, that's true. But in swing states, that's a really bold gamble.
However this ends, Kevin McCarthy is not going to have a great January, whether he's in the majority or not, simply by virtue of some of these candidates that are running. Kiev Akil, thank you so much. Good to talk to you at this early hour out there. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
You too. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. We will wrap up the show in just a bit. You're up north.
I'm pearly like the white, with whites of your eyes.
As we've told you now, As Goes Wisconsin is now a three-hour show and starts right after we finish on this fine network of radio station. And her guests today include, coming up after the top of the hour, State Representative Katrina Shankland, hashtag warrior. She also has Dr. Mike Fixes Your Life and Your Lineup, candidate Mike Van Summeren on running in the 5th Congressional District, and State Representative Deb Andraka on all the many, many bills that never had a hearing. And if you hadn't heard that statistic previously, in olden times, meaning when I was in the legislature 15 years ago, upwards of 40% of Republican bills would at least get a public hearing so that people could come in and testify about them. You could exchange ideas, et cetera, et cetera. Somewhere between 1 and 5%. Of Democratic bills get a public hearing now with Republicans in charge of the legislature. Not great stuff for democracy, but there's a lot about the grand old party that has not been great for democracy. And the latest example came up just yesterday when a Waukesha County judge ruled that local election clerks can't fill in some pretty obvious missing information on absentee ballot witness certificates. The judge, Michael Afrahamian, is saying that state law is clear that addresses cannot be filled in on absentee ballot envelopes, which is interesting because it's been that way for years and for cycles, where minor address errors could be fixed by election clerks. But once Trump lost and Republicans were looking for an easy scapegoat, we ended up going after absentee ballots. We went after drop boxes. We have groups here like the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty that tried to get thousands upon thousands of voters kicked off the voter rolls and force you to re-register to vote. So this is all fairly new, where the Republicans are using courts or the legislative process to make things harder to vote, not easier.
And this was an interesting one because the Legislative Rulemaking Committee insisted that the 2020 guidance had to be removed from the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And that's when Democratic chair on the WEC and Jacobs said, well, that's fine. We'll remove the 2020 guidance, but there was still 2016 guidance. And that's why this court case had to like go about, because that's how long ago that this guidance has been put in place. We've been using it for 6 years now, at least. And they're just whining about losing in 2020. And it's just one more punching bag that Republicans are using and making it harder for Republicans and Democrats alike to vote.
So this Waukesha County judge's ruling will almost certainly go to the state Supreme Court. And that, of course, has a 4-3 conservative majority. But conservative Justice Brian Hagedorn has occasionally voted with the progressives. For example, when Trump sued in 2020, Hagedorn noted that Wisconsin law is not all that clear on what exactly constitutes a voter's address as written on the absentee ballot envelope. Hagedorn wrote in December of 2020, while the world has surely faced more pressing questions, the contours of what makes an address has real impact. Would a street address be enough, but no municipality? Is the state necessary? The zip code? Does it matter if the witness uses their mailing address and not the residential address, which can be different? And the court ultimately rejected Trump's lawsuit, where Hagedorn pointed out, you know, it's not crystal clear what constitutes an address. So the Legislative Audit Bureau reviewed tens of thousands of ballots after the 2020 election. They reviewed, here's the exact number, 14,710 absentee ballot certificates in 29 different municipalities. And they found that 1,022 were missing part of a witness address. That's roughly 7% of all the certificates that the agency reviewed. And in many cases, that was for lack of a zip code, that somebody got their address right. But again, because they're taking it to their clerk's office, or even if they're mailing it, you know, that address on the back is not where it's being mailed to. So they don't think to put the zip code down. Well, now, under the guidance from this Waukesha County judge, that absentee ballot envelope and that ballot could be challenged or thrown out. A vote that is otherwise legally cast, not cast fraudulently. Say that again, not cast fraudulently, but is lacking a zip code on the back of it. What Republicans are fighting for is to tell you that if you do that, your vote doesn't count. We get to throw your ballot in the shredder because you didn't put a zip code on the back of it. So again, if in a review of absentee ballots, they found about 7% were missing at least part of an address. Imagine if 7% of all of Wisconsin's absentee ballots were thrown out because of this Republican attack on voting. Remember, the presidential races here have been decided by right around 20,000 votes. The last races for governor were decided by around 30,000 votes out of something like 2.5 million votes that were cast. We are that close of a state. And so you have a political class looking for every way possible to throw out a legally cast vote, when what they should be doing is actually trying to win over more votes, win over more voters with your ideas, with your proposals, with your campaign commercials, with whatever the case may be. But when you can't win on the issues, you cheat basically. You look for technicalities. You throw around a lot of bluster about, you know, voter fraud and other things that, you know, 2,000 mules, you now say, as if you're having an attack of Tourette syndrome, when there's nothing there. The fraud is imaginary. And we're still seeing, we still get, you know, emails every so often about, oh, you're just covering up the real fraud that's right in front of you. I think the MyPillow guy mentioned that yesterday, that, you know, he did a review and there's all kinds of fraud. Luke, should we take election advice from the MyPillow guy?
I mean, if he really, really had that evidence, he would submit it in a court of law and would be able to actually do something with it. But every time any of these people get in front of a judge and actually try to use the legal system to throw out their alleged evidence, it evaporates. It's gone.
Well, there you go again, protecting the deep state, Luke. I don't know. It's just, it's the deep state. It's 2,000 mules.
My fantasy football team name this year for one of my leagues, the Deep State Strikes Back.
Thanks for joining us on this Thursday morning. Dad Shirt Friday tomorrow. Have a great day.